starting us out for this last little closing bit, we had Jill Barber with "You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch." My name is Matthew. This is CJSF Radio 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain. Wish you guys all a happy and beautiful rest of your day. Thank you.
Has savaged the agencies comprising the Department of Health and Human Services, I can't see how there can be any progress to make America healthy again.
That's Stephen Bezruchka, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamyan. This edition of AR features Dr. Stephen Bezruchka on healthcare in America. The United States today has the dubious distinction of being the only major country not to guarantee health care for its population. Some 85 million Americans are uninsured. 500,000 go bankrupt every year because of medically related debt. And we have one of the lowest life expectancy rates of any rich country. 1 out of 4 patients are unable to afford the medicine their doctors prescribe because we pay by far the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs. Bernie Sanders says Medicare for all would save $650 billion a year and provide quality health care for everyone. There's plenty of money for the Pentagon, but little for ordinary people. We need accessible and affordable health care now. Our guest today is Dr. Stephen Bezruchka. He's on the faculty of the Department of Health Systems and Population Health at the University of Washington. He worked for many years as an emergency physician in Seattle. He's the author of Inequality Kills Us All: COVID-19's Health Lessons for the World. He spoke in Seattle in late September. And now, Dr. Stephen Bezruchka.
Major news outlets have some staff designated to prepare obituaries in advance of someone's death. I want to talk about the death of the United States. What does the obituary of this country look like? There are precedents, such as the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989, predicting the death of the Soviet Union. Consider the strategy report, Make Our Children Healthy Again, released by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services on September 9, 2025, as the equivalent of the Berlin Wall. What is at stake? At the helm of the HHS department is Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the son of Robert Kennedy, who was assassinated in 1968. He has no background in science or in any subject related to health. He attended Harvard as an undergraduate, studying American history and literature. He then got a law degree from the University of Virginia in 1981, but failed the bar exam, although he passed it on a subsequent attempt and was admitted to the New York State Bar in 1985. His early years, 14 of them he admitted, were spent addicted to heroin. He eventually became clean through what he calls spiritual awakening. His cousin, Caroline Kennedy, daughter of President John F. Kennedy, when she testified against appointing him HHS secretary, calls RFK Jr. a predator, saying he has a perverse sense of despair and violence. She talked about how he preys on the desperation of parents of sick children. RFK Jr. marketed the phrase, Make America Healthy Again, or MAHA, along with Trump's MAGA concepts, by producing products such as hats and T-shirts and sweaters emblazoned by this text. Let's explore this man's ideas. He is prone to making blatantly false statements such as, quote, we are now the sickest country in the world, end of quote. For 30 years, I've been talking about America's standing in the Health Olympics, namely the ranking of countries by life expectancy, which is the average length of life if mortality rates stayed the same. Exploring that measure, in the 1950s, we were certainly in the top 10 nations by that metric. I used the United Nations Human Development Report, published annually, where Table 1 lists each UN country and its life expectancy. In 2022, we ranked 44th, tied with Cuba. We had among the highest COVID death rates of all nations, but that does not explain the carnage. When I went to Stanford Medical School in 1970, we were 17th. When I entered Johns Hopkins School of Public Health in 1992, we were 22nd. In 2019, we were 36th. What this shows is that since the 1950s, many other nations have seen larger improvements in health. That is, they are not dying so young as we are. In fact, since 2015, our life expectancy has stagnated. That is, it is no longer improving and is in fact declining. All of our lives are being cut short, which is not a good sign. While many of you might say this doesn't apply to me as I practice healthy behaviors and see my doctor when needed, it applies to all of us, you and me. We all die younger than we should. In 2022, we were about 7 life expectancy years behind Japan, which has been the longest lived country since 1978. To gauge that difference, consider that our 3 leading disease killers here are heart disease, then cancer, and then unintentional injuries. Together, they account for about half of deaths in the U.S. If we eradicated them, so no one died of heart disease, cancer, or unintentional injuries, we gain about 7 life expectancy years and be among the healthiest nations. This measures how sick we are. We are not the sickest nation. The same UN list puts African countries such as Nigeria and Chad at the bottom, some 25 life expectancy years below the United States. There are about 150 sicker nations. So America is not by any measure the sickest nation in the world. But being sicker than all the other rich nations and a considerable number of poorer ones is not something to be proud of. RFK Jr. spouts many other false facts, such as half of people in China have diabetes. I could go on and list many more. The main point is that he's not a trustworthy source of easily verifiable factual information. Let's explore his Make Our Children Healthy Again report and strategy. The report, issued in May, has been widely discredited for having many false statements together with references that did not hold up. It was sloppily done, likely using artificial intelligence. However, on page 6, they correctly graph life expectancy and healthcare expenditure for 21 rich countries from 1970 to 2023. In 1970, the U.S. had lower life expectancy than almost all the other nations, and by 2023, it was far worse, demonstrating stagnation and decline that I mentioned above. To achieve this, America spends twice as much per person on health care than any other nation. We spend almost $5 trillion per year on health care, over $14,500 per person, which represents a sixth of our total economy. Yet millions of people here do not have access to health care. Pending legislation will make that worse. The Commonwealth Fund tracks the performance of health care in rich nations. Their study last year found the U.S. spending the most and having the worst medical care performance among 9 other rich nations, namely Australia, Canada, France, Germany, the Netherlands, New Zealand, Sweden, Switzerland, and the United Kingdom. While most Americans believe that it is healthcare that makes us healthy, that is not true. Studies show that the best that medical care in the U.S. can do is avert 10% of avoidable mortality. That leaves 90% to be explained by other factors. The most important of these is politics. The Department of Health in our longest-lived state, Hawaii, is very explicit in saying politics matters most. Yet in surveys, people rank politics last in terms of producing good health. Hawaii's Department of Health puts lifestyle factors and medical care as least important in producing health. Part of the problem is our language. We speak of accessing health, paying for health, getting health, ensuring health, when all those are about health care. If I ask someone, do you want health or health care, they are confused. With these concepts in mind, let's look at the recently released MAHA strategy report, which seeks to end childhood chronic disease by having policies to end the childhood chronic disease crisis. They plan to do this by having an NIH MAHA chronic disease initiative to produce more research in which they call a whole person approach. They propose launching a real world data platform that aims to produce a single integrated data set for researchers. Then they list others, such as, it's a long list, new approach methodologies, cumulative exposures, autism, vaccine injury, water quality, air quality, microplastics and synthetics, prescribing patterns and impact on mental health, food for health, nutrition, repurposed drugs, precision agricultural technology, oral health and systemic disease connection, gut microbiome research initiative, longitudinal research for chronic disease prevention, longitudinal pediatric health insights, clinical trial networks, electromagnetic radiation, mental health and addiction research, rural and tribal health, and finally, artificial intelligence. This sounds like pie-in-the-sky daydream stuff. They want to reinvent the wheel. The rest of the 20 pages is similar in scope and lacks any references to substantiate that their efforts might work. My sense is they asked the latest artificial general intelligence program to compile this. The report contradicts many other directives the Trump administration has taken. It adds to the confusion throughout the Trump government. Given how the government has savaged the agencies comprising the Department of Health and Human Services, I can't see how there can be any progress to make America healthy again. Funding for research has been drastically cut. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention has been emaciated. The situation is going to get much, much worse. Do we need more research to make America healthy again? No. We can learn from healthier nations as to what they did. I'll talk about Japan and how we, the United States, made it the longest-lived country later. What matters when it comes to making America healthy again? To begin with, we need a scorecard. We get what we measure. The report and strategy lacks any measure that we can follow to gauge progress. I propose we use our standing in the Health Olympics as the measure. Instead of falling in the ranking, let's get us moving up. The prevailing belief in the United States is that we are the best at everything. Every school child recites the Pledge of Allegiance daily, namely, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. This patriotic shibboleth implies we're the best. But Americans sense something is wrong in this country. They are not achieving the American dream, which is in fact a nightmare. That is, you have to be asleep to believe it. That is why they voted in someone who planned to drain the swamp and make America great again. Trump voters tend to be concentrated where our health is declining the most. Red states and smaller areas where death rates are rapidly going up vote Republican. Many killer facts verify this. Many of you know two people under age 65 who died. One of them would still be alive had they lived in countries like Australia, Canada, Germany, Japan, or Portugal. Fully half of all deaths under age 65 could be avoided if we had the death rates of our peer nations. Think of all the celebrities that didn't live long lives. Steve Jobs comes to mind. Most of us are impacted by his clever innovations, yet he died at age 56. Paul Allen, the co-founder of Microsoft, died at age 65. I'm obsessed with being alive, so I focus on deaths. Death rates are a good indicator. Death is hard to fake, and we keep good records, as do all the other rich countries. No one in America can claim to be the healthiest person at any one time. The oldest old person is almost never in the United States. Most hail from Japan, the longest-lived nation. What is the medicine we need? It has to be political, as the health department in Hawaii points out. The two most important factors producing health in a nation are the amount of economic inequality present and the support for early life. Neither of these concepts are present in the material coming from the Department of Health and Human Services. Instead, the legislation that has been passed, the so-called Big Beautiful Bill, will drastically increase economic inequality, making the poor much poorer and the rich much richer than they ever thought possible. It is a big killer bill. The major reason is that before the Maha report appeared and more than 40 UN nations were healthier than we were, a massive transfer occurred from the bottom 90% of us to the top 1%. From 1975 to 2023, $79 trillion has been transferred from the bottom 90% to the top 1%, according to the RAND Corporation. Most of us have a hard time fathoming such big numbers. How much is $79 trillion? Suppose you took a stack of freshly minted $100 bills, our largest denomination, and stacked them tightly to the amount of $79 trillion. How far would it reach? A quarter of the way to the moon. That is how much you and I have had taken from us over the last 50 years, so the rich can be even more rich than they are. As Nobel Prize-winning economist Amartya Sen said, quote, "I believe that virtually all the problems in the world come from inequality of one kind or another," end of quote. The plan today is to make the richest person in the world, Elon Musk, whose wealth is close to $500 billion, according to Forbes magazine, to make him the first world's trillionaire. The board of directors of Tesla plan to offer him a pay package of $1 trillion over the next decade when the shareholders meet in November. The richest person in the world wants more, and it looks like he will get it. I can't think of anything more obscene. He needs to be told there are no pockets in coffins. That is, he can't take it with him. Some say high inequality is good for us, as it spurs economic growth, inspires competition, and produces better products to enhance our lives. But even the International Monetary Fund, which used to champion inequality as creating the conditions for economic growth, now has abandoned that trope. Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis stated that in modern societies, you can't have both high inequality and democracy. 2,500 years ago, Plato said that for society to function, the biggest gap between the richest and poorest should be no more than 4 to 1. Today's ratio is around 1 trillion to 1. That helps explain why we no longer live in a democracy, but in a dictatorship. We live in an oligoklepto-plutocacistocracy. This translates into rule by a few, oligo, who steal, klepto, are rich, pluto, and incompetent, kakistocrats. Prove me wrong. Here is a list of some of the problems that stem from economic inequality. Worse health and higher mortality, less trust, more COVID deaths, more violence in society, more mass shootings, more obesity, lower scores on international educational outcomes, more corruption, and so on. We can also boast that we have the most mental illness of any nation. I have to be a little careful here, since diagnosing mental illness is not as accurate as diagnosing death. But studies over these last two decades confirm that America is driving us crazy. Mental illness is affecting younger and younger people, and not just mental illness. Close to 1,000 researched studies detail the harms of inequality. Take school shootings. Those of you who are younger will have likely experienced school shooting drills. From 2009 to 2018, there were 288 school shooting deaths. To frame that, how many were there in the rest of the G7 nations, a comparable population? 5. Over 50 times as many per capita here. These countries were Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, and the United Kingdom. American mass shootings are found in areas with high inequality and high incomes. Those studies are never reported when reasons are discussed. Instead, we look at firearm availability. We have close to 500 million civilian-owned guns, more semi-automatic rifles in public hands than in the military. Switzerland has a high gun ownership, although much lower than here, but no school shootings. No school shootings in Switzerland. Instead of recognizing a common source for all our problems, namely high inequality, we respond to each one separately. Parents buy bulletproof backpacks for their children, and there are regular school shooter drills in schools. We consume half of the world's drugs for mental illness here. We have novel GLP-1 drugs for obesity. Why not treat the source problem, namely our high income and wealth inequality, which stems from political choices, as Hawaii's health department point out. How to treat the inequality? Instead of reducing taxes anymore on the rich, we could raise them. Our minimum wage remains at $7.25 an hour since 2009. Why not have a maximum wage? This is not a crazy idea. In April 1942, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt proposed a maximum wage of $25,000 a year by having a marginal tax rate of 100% on incomes above that. While that tax rate didn't pass, in 1944, there was a 94% tax on the highest incomes, which was raised to 96% in 1946. The highest tax rate remained at 91% in the 1950s. But the rich have always wanted only one thing throughout history, and that is everything. So they work diligently to reduce the taxes they pay. In 2018, the lowest tax rate paid on combined federal, state, and local income was 23%, and that was paid by the richest 400 families. That is a smaller rate than the bottom 10% or any other group paid in taxes. Back in 1950, when we were one of the longest-lived nations, they paid a 70% tax rate. Recall Trump's big killer bill passed in July 2025 had an objective of maintaining the tax cuts on the rich from his first term and then lowering them even further. Consider this big whopper the biggest heist in American history. No matter what RFK Jr.'s Making Our Children Healthy Again tries to do, it won't work without tackling our profane inequality. My book, Inequality Kills Us All,